Good morning. This morning I would like, as a manner of getting us properly prepared to partake of the Lord's Supper, to get our minds in the right focus, I want to ask you, we're going to kind of do a little bit of role playing. You're going to be the judge or a member of a jury. I'm going to present a case. And I'm going to be honest here. There's two standards in an American judicial system to prove a case. I'm a medical researcher and I'm an attorney. And you'll see a little bit of those flavors come out in this sermon. For a criminal case, whoever is prosecuting the criminal case has to prove the case beyond a reasonable doubt. So if you rob a bank, steal a car, shoot someone, something like that, the state or whoever's prosecuting you has to prove that case beyond a reasonable doubt. If there is a civil case, an auto accident, a slip and fall, contract dispute, something of that nature, then the standard is proving that case by a preponderance of the evidence. I am here to tell you today I will accomplish neither of these, mainly because two reasons. For me to do that, I would have to call angels to the stand, put them under oath, and absent divine intervention, I cannot do that. Reason number two, and equally as important, Phil Robertson, our preacher here who controls the schedule of who's going to speak, told me to keep this at 20 minutes or less. And for me to prove a case like that would take way more than 20 minutes. So I'm not going to accomplish this, but I do hope that I can make you appreciate a couple of instances that Jesus went through, and these are before he went to the cross. Maybe a little more than you did before today. And I know I did as I started to look into this and study the events that took place in Matthew chapter 4 and Luke chapter 22. And basically what I want to ask you to determine, the actions of these angels, were they a supplement or were they a necessity? My argument today that I'm going to put forth is they were a necessity. And I am going to make it, sorry for the legalese, but I would not want to do this in real life. If I had to put an angel on the stand, there are a lot of arrogant attorneys who think that they are above all men and all this. From the Bible, we know that angels are higher than human beings. The event in 2 Kings chapter 19 talks about one angel killing 185,000 Assyrian soldiers. We also know from 1 Kings chapter 22, verse 22, where a spirit came before God and said he would go and deceive Ahab by being a lying spirit in the mouth of his prophets, and God said, go and succeed, and he did. I really would not want to do this. I would not want to put an angel on the stand and attempt to examine or cross-examine them, because I think any human being would be humbled rather quickly. But for the sake of today, I just want to go through this exercise. To put our minds in the right frame here, I want you to think about God, the Father. When Jesus was on earth, was his life easy? Did God make his life easy? He was not born into a wealthy family. He had a bounty put on his head, basically as a baby. His parents had to get up in the middle of the night and flee because Joseph saw a vision. They had to flee to Egypt, not the easiest thing in the world. He probably, and I say this by making what I believe is a necessary inference, probably lost his father early in life, probably somewhere in his teenage years. We cannot say that with certainty. But the last known reference is in Luke chapter 2, verse 48 of Joseph. In Matthew chapter 8 and verse 20, Jesus says, you know, he did not have a consistent place to call home. Before he died at the end of his life, he was tortured, and then he was murdered. And I'm using murder there in the legal definition, where there's intent, there's an opportunity, there's a motive, and then there's an execution. All those things took place. God did not make life easy for his son while his son was on earth in human form. I ask you this also along in a similar manner. Did God use or permit miracles to make his life easy? And I'm kind of combining in this sermon anything that's outside of what we would call the normal processes that we know. And that can be angelic intervention or a miracle. And I would say he never did that. Jesus never sat down at night and was hungry and just, you know, said, okay, I want a filet mignon, and there it is. That didn't happen. There may have been times, and if you look up all the miracles, you're not going to see these listed. People will not include the events in Luke 4:29, John 8:59, or John 10:39. These are all events where Jesus was about to be pushed off a cliff. He was going to be stoned, and he was going to be arrested. And in some manner, he was able to evade those events. In my opinion, and that's all that this is, in my opinion, there was divine intervention there for Jesus to be able to do that. But getting into our topic at hand, in Matthew chapter 4, verse 1, when Jesus was led by the Spirit into the wilderness to be tempted by the devil, and I think most of us know the account. And for the sake of time, I'm not going to go into all the details of these temptations. We've had sermons on these temptations. John Haley did one, actually, a few months ago. Very good sermon, breaking down each time the devil went after Jesus. What I want you to take note of, this battle between Satan and Jesus takes place in our Bibles in about 8 verses. In verse 11, when the battle is over, it says, then the devil left him, and behold, angels came and were ministering to him. I want you to think about that event. Again, I'm not going to break down the battle between Jesus and Satan. But he fasted, he being Jesus, fasted for 40 days and 40 nights before being led by the Spirit into the wilderness to be tempted. I have looked this up, and I'm sure many of you have, and I've had discussions in classes I've taught here with regard to how long a human being can fast and survive. 40 days is right at that brink. And I'm going to be honest. Now, I'm a medical researcher, and I've been doing this for a lot of years. I don't think anyone actually knows. Then you can pinpoint, and for that matter, I think every human being has a different point at which they would give in and die. And also, if I get something in the mail or an email saying, would you like to be a part of this research group? We're going to make you fast for 30 days. We're going to make another group fast for 40 days. We're going to make another group fast for 50 days. One group's going to die. One will probably survive, and the other one we're not sure, but we need to you know, everyone's going to say no to that. I don't care how much money they give you. But the point being, Jesus was on the brink of death when he was going through this process. We know the temptations. Satan asked him to turn stones to bread, took him to the pinnacle of the temple, asked him to throw himself down to test God. Jesus refuted all these, and then Satan offered up all the worldly kingdoms to Jesus if he would but bow down and worship him, and Jesus refuted all those. One thing I want you to think about, this is a battle, in my opinion, that transcends mortal and immortal. From everything we know from the scriptures, Jesus was in human form. I don't believe Satan was. I think Satan was in the form that he is and always has been. And he was going after Jesus with everything he had. In 8 verses, it's very easy to read this in about 30 seconds and not think twice about it. You got someone on the brink of death physically, fighting a battle beyond something that we can even imagine with an angel, at least someone of angelic power. Face to face, this is something beyond, I believe, human comprehension. It's beyond my comprehension. I would ask you this. When those angels came at the end of that battle and rendered assistance to Jesus, what I put forth after 40 days of fasting, after going through that battle, that had to be physically, mentally, and emotionally just pure exhaustion. I, in my opinion, believe that Jesus dies without this intervention of these angels. I don't think it's something that propped him up and made life easy. And do I know exactly what happened there as far as their intervention and when they rendered aid? I don't know. But I would ask you to just consider that and think. He had to be on the brink of death anyway. And then to put him as a human, although he was God at the same time, he was still confined to a human body, to put that body through all that, I believe that he was on the brink of death. And I think that was a necessity, not a supplement. One other example, and I'll stay within Phil's timeline here. Jesus on the Mount of Olives. So this is getting closer to the end of his life, just before his arrest. He goes to the Mount of Olives. In Luke 22:41, it says, he withdrew from them being the disciples, about a stone's throw, and he knelt down and he prayed. He prays in Luke 22:42, saying, Father, if you are willing, remove this cup from me. Nevertheless, not my will, but yours be done. In verse 43, it says, and there appeared to him an angel from heaven strengthening him. One thing to note here, this account of this angel appearing and strengthening Jesus only takes place in Luke's account. Luke was, as we all know, by trade, a doctor. And I don't think this is a coincidence that a doctor would bring in this detail, because to the doctor, he would look at this and know what Jesus was going through. And in my opinion, this doctor would find this additional detail necessary to know what he was going through. The next verse, in verse 44, it says, and being in agony, he prayed more earnestly, and his sweat became like great drops of blood falling down to the ground. And what I'm going to leave you with today is, what if I had this angel on the stand and I was questioning him about this event, and I said, you know, tell me what it was like. What was Jesus going through? And what if, and again, I have no idea if he would or would not be permitted to do this, but what if he did a Revelation 1? What if he said, see for yourself? And he made that image visible to me in some manner. And he said, look at Jesus. Look at him down on his hands and knees. Look at the sweat and or blood, and I've heard those arguments through the years that it was actually blood coming through his pores. I don't know. I don't think anyone knows. But in that instance, I would know, and he would say, what does it look like? As it's dropping from his body, is that sweat, Is that blood? Is it a mixture? Do you know his heart rate? I can tell you his heart rate. Do you know how much adrenaline was being pushed into his bloodstream? Because I can tell you, the human part of him knew what was about to happen, and the spiritual part of him knew things that were going on in heaven. And he asked God to let this cup pass from him, and that's not something he did, you know, trying to, you know, take the easy way out. That's the human part of you. We have an instinct to preserve our lives, and that instinct was kicking in here, and he had to fight against it. And if he gave me that image, I think at the end of it, I would say, I don't know. And I don't want to know. But I think what he would say to me, and this is my argument, is I think he would say, when I gave him strength there, that wasn't to make things easier. That was to make things possible, because his body was breaking down and failing, and I propped him up just enough that he could finish his mission and save mankind from our sins. I ask you to think about these things as we partake of the Lord's Supper today.